This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And good morning, my friend. It is about 7 minutes after 9 o'clock here on this Wednesday, April the 6th. Time now for the Wednesday morning talk show brought to you by the Plummer Funeral Home in Litchfield. I'm Terry Tote. Alongside is everybody's favorite uncle, Uncle Ralph Niehaus. How do you do, Uncle Ralph?
Wonderful, wonderful. Probably better than a lot of people that were running for local offices are doing this morning if their vote total wasn't what they wanted.
Well, you know, in every contest, you're going to have winners and you're going to have losers. But the fact of the matter is, when you have contestants, that's the important thing. So everybody gets an opportunity to get their ideas out. And that's, if you voted yesterday, kudos to you. If you didn't, well, maybe you should get in there next time. So that's just how that works out.
And the turnout, I guess, was a little surprising in some areas that, you know, where there wasn't a lot to vote for in the rural areas, you know.
And I always like to remind people that the municipal, and by the way, Tom Emery is our guest in studio. Good morning, Tom.
Pleasure to be here, Terry. How are you, Uncle Ralph?
Morning.
Tom, and Tom's an author and, of course, a good friend of ours, and we're going to be talking about stuff. But when you have the opportunity to vote and make your vote count, you know, I take it as a privilege. Kind of get goosebumps, I must admit, when you walk into the voting booth, still to this day, because you get to cast your vote. That's kind of part of being an American to me.
And it's something I refuse to miss, no matter what.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I don't care who's running, how small. Like yesterday in Second Ward in Cardinalville, we had an alderman's race, and everything else was vote for two with two candidates.
Sure, sure.
We're still not going to miss that, no matter what.
Right, right, right. But it's, you know. Get out there and cast your vote. So.
And kudos to all of the people who run for various offices in all the communities. Kudos to those people who want to do those jobs, which are, in plain words, godforsaken most of the time.
Sure,
but
sure.
Congratulations to the winners and more power to them.
And we forget that our local politicians, our aldermen, our city councils, our school boards, county boards, this is where most of our tax money goes, and these are the people that are responsible for handling it and dispersing it. So that's very, very important. Even though it's maybe an off-year election, so to speak, or just what we used to call city elections, now it's very important. Mm-hmm. So,
thanks to our friends in state government and federal government, when the local authorities look in their bucket, it's usually empty. Hasn't been much put in it lately.
No, that's still a problem they're working on. So we're going to be talking with Tom Emery. As we mentioned, Tom has put together a book called Eddie, Lincoln's Forgotten Son. We also want to touch on Howard Knox, who was a World War I ace. And you were telling me, Tom, he actually flew a Sopwith Camel plane.
Yeah, if you follow the Peanuts comic strip, you remember Snoopy flew the Sopwith Camel? Well, that's what Howard Knox flew. And I'll be very brief about this. Howard Knox was born in Girard, raised in Cardinalville. If people in Cardinalville remember the old Chamness house, which is on southeast catty corner from the courthouse, three-story brick house, that's where he grew up.
Really?
He went on to be one of America's most decorated flying aces, shot down 6 planes in combat in the span of a month. In the fall of 1918, before he's captured himself, he received honors from both the United States government and the United Kingdom, as well as the UK. His honors were actually presented by Edward Prince of Wales by personal invitation. He remains one of America's most decorated flying aces. And like I say, the Sopwith Camel was his machine.
And Ralph, of course, you served in Korea, and this was the advent of the jet fighters and such.
This was coming into being in the Korean War.
Yeah. Can you imagine a Sopwith Camel? That's a biplane, if my memory serves me right, like the one Snoopy.
130 horsepower engine.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. Not a whole lot of protection up there either.
And keep in mind that the Wright brothers only flown their first flight in December of 1903.
Yeah.
So a mere decade later, planes are being used in combat in World War I. And the Sopwith Camel being the most famous one, probably from America.
And the equipment wasn't too sophisticated.
No, it was not sophisticated at all.
up, down, left, right.
Yeah.
Let's hope we land.
crashing planes left and right.
Yeah.
The life expectancy for British pilots at that time, I think, was 21 days. Or something like that, because now they shot down, they crash them, what have you. It took a fearless guy to fly this type of thing, and Howard Knotts was certainly that guy. He went on to be a foremost aviation expert, helped negotiate air law both in Illinois and around the country, died in Springfield in 1942. He actually practiced law in the old Lincoln Herndon Law Office building in Springfield.
You got to be kidding me.
Yep.
Really? That's amazing for the ties to Central Illinois.
And I should credit Lyndall Lovelace of Rural Gillespie. It was his interest and his support that made this project possible. Lyndall's great to work with on this. He remembered Knotts and some of his family members. So thank you, Lyndall, for giving us the opportunity to do this. And it's really had a great initial response.
Now, he did get captured, right?
He was shot down in October of 1918. He spent over a month in German captivity. Among the other things he did, depending on the version you believe, he was on a flat car, like a troop train being taken to a different prison, when he found crates that contained Fokker planes that were Germans. Depending on the official report of what version you believe, he managed to light a cigarette or throw some lit refuse in, which burned up several of these planes in the crates. One version says he broke some struts, which took him out. Knotts never quit fighting. No matter what, that's a good example. Even in captivity, he's going to do it.
He was just an ornery cuss, wasn't he? In many respects.
Considering that he came from a very refined family and went on to a very distinguished, respected career, and is described as a rather soft-spoken individual.
Right.
The guy never stopped. I mean, he was hardy, he was fearless, he was gutsy, and he did whatever it took for the American cause. If it meant knocking out German planes on a troop train, so be it. He was going to do it.
And yet here was a gentleman, like so many of the gentlemen of that era, Tom, that if you mentioned his name away from here a little bit, people would say, who?
Yeah,
you know, not a well-known household name.
He was actually the only World War I ace from downstate Illinois. There were six from the state of Illinois, five from the Chicago area. He was the only one from downstate. One of his friends was Reed Landis, who was the son of Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the autocratic and controversial commissioner of Major League Baseball.
Yes.
They were close friends throughout their lives. But Knotts was the only one from downstate, which is why I titled my book Ace of the Prairie.
And being a generational thing, obviously people nowadays don't recollect the name. But do you think that there's a bit of an increase in the interest of the World War, the Great World Wars, one and two, by people, especially baby boomers?
World War I in particular, because the last surviving American World War I participant, Mr. Frank Buckles, died in West Virginia, I believe, at the age of 110 recently. The centennial will be coming up of that in a few years. That's sparked a little bit more interest in World War I, so I think that certainly plays into it.
And to take that one step further, Tom, unfortunately, we're getting into the era now where we're rapidly, losing our World War II veterans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then, next bunch, Korea,
it's
on down the ladder. But World War II veterans, I believe, are dying at the rate of like 2,000 or something a day, which it just mind-boggling when you think about it.
And when you think about must-win situations.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was it, because fighting for our freedom takes on a whole different tone in that sense. And
probably the greatest thing the United States had going for it in World War II was the fact that it had a capacity of the industrial capacity, and the fact that the American people were just pretty ticked off. I mean, when you tick off somebody, a country that has the industrial capacity and the resources we had, I don't think as soon as America got in the war, Hitler didn't stand a chance.
And you look at World War One, both World Wars, the number of casualties are just staggering.
Mm-hmm.
World War One, between 8.5 and 10 million people died in this war. France lost 1.4 million. Russia lost about 2 million. Germany lost upwards of that. America was relatively unscathed. They only lost about 50,000 that war. As someone, you know how I've studied Civil War in my life. You read those things, and it just boggles the mind. Then World War II is very much the same way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you just mentioned, Tom, Civil War, and it just blows my mind every time I read some of the history of the Civil War and the casualties of that war. Mm-hmm. When you look at basically, you're talking about hand-to-hand combat in the Civil War. I mean, just you and me going at it, because there wasn't a lot of sophisticated weaponry.
No, the idea of repeating weapons didn't even come into vogue until late in the Civil War. people have a hard time getting their hands around the idea of a single-shot rifle.
Right.
But that's what dominated the Civil War for the first 3 years. A repeater, such as the Henry repeating rifle, didn't even come in until about 1864. So the Civil War had some of the greatest technological advances of any military conflict.
Yeah.
But just what you said, the hand-to-hand idea of that.
Or wait a minute, Tom, I got to load my gun.
Yeah, and they might be able to get off two, maybe three rounds a minute if they were really good at
it. Yeah.
So.
My goodness, that's amazing. That's amazing. Well, Tom, let's take a break here. We'll hear from our sponsor. When we come back, we'll talk about this historical perspective you've written about Lincoln's forgotten son. It's called Eddie. We'll do that in 30 seconds.
At Plummer Funeral Home, we've been helping local families make final arrangements in advance for many years. We can help you plan ahead so that when our services are needed, everything will be in order and your family can begin the healing process without the burdens of having to make arrangements at the time of need. At Plummer Funeral Home, we make funeral planning easy for you. Plummer Funeral Home, the locally owned hometown funeral home, your neighbor and your friend.
While we were away, Tom and Ralph were talking about the fact that when President Lincoln was assassinated, it took, what, several days before the news reached the West Coast. And just a week or so ago, it was the 30th anniversary of President Reagan being shot. And a lot of people were saying, well, what were you doing? Well, I remember distinctly because before we had remodeled that control room that where Randy Prangy's sitting in right now on WSMI FM, Tom, we had the old control board in there and was facing the other direction, but we had just put in the Mutual News satellite receiver. It wasn't the old phone line hookup. It was the satellite receiver. And I can remember getting an alert, and I don't remember how I even got it, but they alerted us that such and such in 30 seconds we were going to have a bulletin, and I remember joining that in progress, or joining that on the satellite, and just to have... Ross Simpson was the name of the Mutual newsman who kind of pulled a fast one. He got in when they took the president to the hospital. He dressed up like a doctor, and he got on the operating ward and actually was able to file a live report by stepping out, going to a payphone, and Mutual News had all this live information from this guy named Ross Simpson, and I can remember seeing him being debriefed on the evening news by all the other TV networks and radio networks and everything. But that was just an amazing thing to have the satellite, brand new at that time, and being able to follow all those events of that day.
And one of the great moments, I think, in American news history had to be Walter Cronkite breaking the news to America about JFK's assassination.
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the—I hate to use the word iconic, but that's really one of the seminal moments in American news history.
Well, if aliens ever came down from another planet and they wanted to see certain highlights of our history or lowlights, as the case might be, that would be one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Without question.
Absolutely. Tom, you've written a book called Eddie, Lincoln's Forgotten Son. Tell us a little bit about some things that we don't know much about Eddie.
Sure. That is actually a second edition that I did. I originally wrote that booklet in 2002 and updated recently. People say that everything had been written on Lincoln that could be written. I kind of proved wrong with this because Lincoln had four children. The second one, Edward Baker Lincoln, who died before the age of four, was largely forgotten history, save for a few scattered references. There had been an article written in the Journal of Illinois State Historical Society in 1954. Not much had been written on Eddie Lincoln, so I thought, the way I am with history, that's something I really get on. I thought, there's a story that needs to be told here that we should tell. Even though Eddie died before the age of four, you might think, well, he didn't have that much of an impact on the lives of both his parents. First and foremost, if you lose a child, that's obvious. But his death helped define Abraham Lincoln's religious views, which have been long debated. Mary Todd Lincoln, who I freely admit I'm extremely biased toward, I love Mary Todd Lincoln.
She was a very strong woman.
She was a very strong-willed woman. And it's funny, in today's society, when, you know, any nut gets umpteen things, you know, people say, oh, everyone deserves a second chance. Mary Lincoln doesn't get a second chance for what her emotional struggles may have been.
Sure.
They began to take shape after Eddie's death. Personal lives of Lincolns are very much different than what we realize today, and that's one thing I want to address as well.
And didn't President Lincoln really start to suffer a major depressive mode once Eddie passed away?
Lincoln had suffered from melancholy, and some writers want to say it was a full-scale depression. It may well have been. Certainly, Eddie's death drove him into some of a depression. Certainly did her as well.
Sure.
But the idea that of the four Lincoln children, three died before the age of 18. Only Robert lived to adulthood. I think says something for the sorrow they had in their lives. And again, their personal lives are very much different. The Lincoln home was not the two-story structure we know today. That was not done until Mary's surprise additions in 1856. That's a whole other story for another day. Lincoln was hardly a household name. He was a one-term congressman, maybe known throughout Illinois, maybe. Certainly was not a national figure. Eddie died in 1850. He did not see the White House, the Civil War, the Lincoln-Douglas debates, the assassination that ensured his father's place in immortality. So the Lincolns in the late 40s, 50s were much different, we think, and that's one thing I've tried to bring out.
And another thing from that era, it was normal for families to lose children. We think a loss of a child now is devastating, and it is. It is. It was devastating to the people of that era, but it was not unusual.
No.
Because the medical conditions just didn't warrant the success of having healthy children.
Child mortality rates were unbelievably high at the time. And again, Mary Lincoln's main detractors like to say, well, everyone lost children. What made her different? So Mary Todd Lincoln can't win, no matter what.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame that people have tried to vilify her like they have, but again, I could talk to the FCC shuts down on that score.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to, as we was discussing earlier, when you talk about the Lincolns or any group of people of that era, the technology that we have today, of course, none of that was there. So when we talk about deaths and families and stuff, the older generation did not live, their lifespan was not very long.
No, something that kind of served me, my grandfather died in 1984. He was born in 1909. I read one time that life expectancy for children born at that time is 45 years.
Wow. Yeah. Now, Tom, once the death, the news of President Lincoln started spreading, it was telegraph, mm-hmm. pretty much was the way to get it, mm-hmm. the news moving, right?
Yes, it was. There's been some outstanding shows on the History Channel on the Lincoln assassination. People did not know for days. The anniversary of death is actually coming up on April 15th. They did not, a lot of people in America did not know that for several days. In fact, when John Wilkes Booth was in hiding, when he was trying to find people to take him in, there are some cases where people did not even know of, now one that he was assassinated, because they didn't know that Lincoln had been assassinated.
Sure.
Yet.
No. Sure.
And really just a few miles from Washington.
And you know, it's so fascinating too, when the White House or the Capitol was in Vandalia, and Lincoln would travel from Springfield to Vandalia, he would stop overnight in Hillsborough. It'd take him 2 days to ride a horse from Springfield to Vandalia.
And can you imagine how grueling that would have been at that time?
Yeah.
You know, from Carnival
Trail is what he was on.
Yeah, from Carnival Springfield's day and a half on horseback. We can do that in an hour in a car today.
Wow. Yeah.
You might go up, stay in Auburn or somewhere.
Yeah.
And if memory serves me right, and I'm not the historical acumen that you have, Tom, but isn't it the term his name is your name is Mud comes from the fact that John Wilkes Booth was helped by Dr. Mud?
Yes. Yeah, Dr. Samuel Mud set Booth's broken leg. Many people, myself included, think that he had some knowledge of this and knew what was happening. He later claimed that had not happened, that he did not know what he was doing. The phrase "your name is Mud" came from that, and we're talking about great newsman Roger Mudd on CBS News. That was a descendant of Samuel Mudd. Samuel Mudd did prison time. I think he was in the Dry Tortugas after that. And it's kind of hard to believe that he didn't know, or at least have some inkling of what was going on. Certainly a lot of evidence points to that.
But still, as a doctor, he was required
mm-hmm.
to take care of this man,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's still the idea, though, for falling short of saying he's one of the so-called conspirators, that he still had knowledge of it.
Yeah.
I think, personally, the Lincoln Museum in Springfield is has, of course, been accomplished in the last few years. But I think it's just fantastic to go there and visit. You can just spend hours in there looking at it. To me, they did a good job on that.
By the way, folks, if you're hearing noise in the background, they're doing major remodeling here at the radio station, and they're putting a big brand-new window in, and we just heard some glass shatter. So it's not Tom, Ralph, and I having a good old party vibe here.
No, it doesn't sound like anyone's badly hurt in there, let's put it that way. Well, we did hear some screams. It didn't sound real good there.
Yeah, and contrary to what you might think, that knocking's not Prango beating his head against the wall in there.
Let's hope not, anyway. Let's hope not.
And maybe they're enjoying what we're doing. Maybe they're beating their heads against the wall over it. I don't know.
That could be. That could be. Tom, quickly back to Eddie Lincoln. What kind of a kid was he? Obviously, he was very young when he passed away, but, you know, everybody has a personality.
We have every reason to believe that he's a very sweet child. He was very lively because Lincolns were not known as disciplinarians.
Sure.
Could be very playful when he wanted to be. Unfortunately, he was ill quite a bit of the time, which...
It kind of a norm for some kids?
Yes,
back
and
then.
Wasn't even home in Springfield very much because the family traveled with Lincoln out to Washington when he was in Congress. They visited Mary Lincoln's family at their home in Kentucky. Did a speaking tour with Lincoln at one point. So Eddie was actually home for only 3/5 of his brief life.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And was sickly for a lot of that.
Yeah. One of the greatest things the state of Illinois has ever done is put in the Presidential Library in Springfield. I think that as much as Route 66 draws people, the Lincoln Library draws people.
It's something I'm very proud of, is the fact that we live this close to Lincoln Country, and that's great. I don't think you can say enough about Lincoln. He's the unanimous number one for greatest president of all time. I don't know how you could argue against that. There's been kind of an effort to so-called humanize, or maybe say dehumanize Lincoln in recent years. I completely disagree with that.
Yeah.
It tells me there's an awful lot of guys looking for tenure and have a lot of time on their hands or something like that.
Yeah.
Because no one's saying it's perfect, least of all not me.
Sure, sure.
And I can go on about that one, but
he was a man who was in the crossroads of history and had to make some very difficult decisions in order to keep the Union together. And even though it cost him political savvy, political backing, he knew for the greater good what had to be done. And that's what you call a leader.
Look, you know how I've studied the Civil War in my time. Without question, it's the darkest period in American history, maybe the most fascinating, but certainly the darkest period in American history. And I think we can get our arms around the severity of that at the time, that he was cast into that.
Yeah,
and, you know, the tragedy in his life with the... as you said, the Civil War and stuff, and you know, we don't know all the details, but a lot of that could have piled up and led in the end to his assassination too.
Without question, because John Wilkes Booth, for all of his brilliance as an actor, was insane.
Yeah,
and was a Southern sympathizer. It wasn't the first time he'd attempted something on Lincoln's life. Been playing this for a long, long time.
And that might be another interesting subject to get into, John Wilkes Booth, one of these days, Tom.
I'll tell you something. Presidential assassinations fascinate me to begin with, because we've lost 4 presidents to assassins' bullets in our country. We've lost 4 others by illness or other means. John Wilkes Booth is one of the darkly fascinating characters of our history, but he was insane. There's no question. And all of our presidential assassins were insane. I could go on about this. The whole idea of the conspiracy, I know there's a new movie coming up on the Lincoln conspiracy. Which I hope people go out and see that.
I think Robert Redford directs.
Famous like that.
Yeah.
Again, it just shows the love and appreciation that people still have for Abraham Lincoln to this day, over 150 years later.
And that's why there'll always be pennies, because we live in the land of Lincoln.
Absolutely. And there's nothing, and we are proud to.
Absolutely. Guys, we're out of time. Tom, time goes so fast when you're in here. We need to get together again here down the road, and we'll plan on doing that, okay?
My pleasure, Terry.
Tom,
and go Lugnuts.
Go, I was going to say.
Opening night in Lansing tomorrow night. Now we're talking about opening day baseball that matters.
There you
you mean the Lugnuts are still going, Tom?
Yes, they are.
That's it for our program today. That's right. We forgot to get the lug nuts in there.
The lug nuts, Terry.
Absolutely. Today's program brought to you by the Plummer Funeral Home in Litchfield. Stick around. The man, the myth, and the man himself, Earl Sarles.
You've got a great-looking soybean crop.
Well, by working with CHS, I've got more than just soybeans.